You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. California's Reparations Task Force is approaching a major milestone, a first-in-the-nation task force setting the legacy of harm caused by slavery, as well as reparations to repair the generational damage that it caused. In its 2 years since being signed into law, the nine-member task force is finalizing a report and recommendations for Black and African Americans who are descendants of slavery. Over the course of 2 days, starting tomorrow in Sacramento, the Reparations Task Force is expected to share its recommendations as well as hear from the community. The meeting will be open to the public and takes place at the California Environmental Protection Agency, Cal EPA. Joining us now is Annalise Finney, a reporter for KQED in the Bay Area, bringing us up to speed with the latest on the task force and what to expect from this upcoming meeting. Good morning, Annalise.
Good morning, Vicky.
So you've been covering this task force really since its inception. How big of a moment is tomorrow and Saturday?
Well, it's a pretty big moment. It's the very last in-person meeting that the task force is having. They're now about at the midway of their last year. So last time I spoke with you is the midway of their 2-year process. And tomorrow, like you mentioned, they're expected to talk about what their recommendations are. They're close to finalizing them. They probably won't talk about the final recommendations quite yet. They do still have 4 months to really work those out, but they'll be going over that and then some of the other task force plans, including their public education plan or how they hope to help Californians understand this legacy of state-sanctioned discrimination against Black communities here.
Given that there's just so much to study and to unpack, I want a little bit of a status check because the last time you joined us was back in September. So what has happened since then? Because there's been, I believe, 2 other task force meetings in Oakland in December and in San Diego in January. What developed from those meetings?
Yeah, so like I said at the last meeting, at the last time we spoke, we were halfway through. They were beginning to look at what should recommendations to repair this harm really look like. And over the last 2 meetings, they broke it into kind of 2 main areas of recommendations. The first area addresses what the UN calls the cessation of harm. It's one of the main categories of reparations as defined under international law. And what that means essentially are policies that look at ending the harm that is still being caused today against the Black community by policies that maybe are not racist in their text, but the way they're carried out have disproportionately impacted the Black community negatively. So they have a whole host of policy recommendations they've been thinking about. Over the last 2 meetings, they were working them through. And typically they address sort of these 13 areas of harm that the task force identified in its initial report. And those areas include things like political disenfranchisement, housing segregation, and separate and unequal education, among other things. The other area of recommendations that the task force was looking at during these last 2 meetings were things that would compensate the Black community for wealth lost because of discriminatory policies. So, for example, if you were a homeowner in a neighborhood that was redlined and then an interstate highway was put down the middle of your main street in your community, how did that impact the wealth that you would have accumulated from your home if that hadn't happened? And those calculations are hard. They've been working with a team of economists who are digging through the numbers, trying to pull up whatever data they can to come up with sort of concrete numbers about the wealth lost, and then make plans to provide that wealth to people who are still living in California today.
Yeah, and even when they come up with these recommendations, it's also communicating them to the public. And you sent us a soundbite that really kind of captures that. It's Donald Tamaki, who's an Asian American member of the Reparations Task Force. And he's really talking about the public concerns over public opinion and potential roadblocks in legislation.
The public education part, respectfully, I think is really critical. If we don't move the needle of public opinion, it's going to make legislation difficult. We've got to bring the public along.
And it's really important to mention that reparations have been done in the past, including Japanese Americans who were incarcerated during World War II. How instrumental is it for this task force to learn from the past?
It's very instrumental. And actually, the public education part is a direct learning. The reparations plan for Japanese Americans after their incarceration during World War II included 3 parts. One was cash payments, one was an official apology, and the other was a federal grant program that provided money to people who wanted to create public education materials. So that could be a curriculum that would be used in a classroom or a documentary or a public art project that would help the public understand what had happened during World War II and how it was that collectively we allowed for this type of discrimination to take place. So as part of this reparation program for Californians who are descended from African-American enslaved people, they're hoping to also have a grant program. And that grant program would operate very similarly to the civil liberties program that came out of the Japanese American reparations program.
Given that these two meetings that took place in the last few months, one was in San Diego and one was in Oakland, their demographics do differ. San Diego has a 6% Black population, according to the census. Oakland has a 22% Black population. Do you think that difference influenced the responses from each community?
That's a good question. You know, I have to say I wasn't at the San Diego meeting, so I can't speak to who came to public comment at that meeting. But in Oakland, there was a pretty robust public showing. I think some people felt a little bit that, you know, Oakland, like you said, has this robust, active Black community. And maybe there weren't as many representatives of the kind of civil institutions that are a big part of Oakland society at this meeting. And I think part of that, at least the people that I spoke to there, said that that was perhaps an issue with communications, that, you know, there have been more people coming to these meetings, but still not enough people know that this process is happening in this state. And that's also kind of why this public education campaign is going to be key if these reparations plans are going to be passed through the legislature. But in Oakland, a city council member spoke at every in-person meeting. City council members, elected representatives from the local municipalities have come in and talked about their approach to reparations and what they would like to see happen in their communities. So compared to San Diego, I can't really say what happened, but in Oakland, there was a showing, and I think people wish it maybe was a little more robust.
And while these meetings are happening, one issue that has been brought up is eminent domain. And that is essentially the government essentially takes away private property for public use. And typically it can include payment of compensation. But when you talk about local representatives, State Senator Stephen Bradford said this at the Oakland meeting.
I challenge you to show anywhere in California that eminent domain or urban renewal was done in white communities.
And that's key. How does eminent domain relate to the research and the conversations that are taking place within the reparations task force?
Yeah, so eminent domain is just one example of official government policies that disproportionately impacted the Black community in California. And part of that impact was denying people wealth. It was, you know, eminent domain is this process of the government essentially taking somebody's land, providing them compensation, but many people say that the compensation is not what it should have been and doesn't equal the wealth that was lost to the community by not having those properties anymore.
Are we in a moment right now where reparations are taking center stage, and are other states or even local municipalities, you know, looking to this statewide task force to address their own questions and of reparations?
Yeah, you know, I think the task force has always understood part of its job to be to inspire other reparations around the country. And I think ultimately the goal is to have a federal reparations program. H.R. 40 is a federal reparations bill that has been in the kind of kicking around the U.S. Congress for a long time. It hasn't gotten traction, and recently it's stalled. But the idea is to kind of encourage other people to do this sort of reflective work and ask, what harm occurred to the Black community here? How did it happen? And what can we do to make it better?
Given that this is a historic task force, I mean, this might be a hard question to answer, but has this gone as you expected since you've really followed it since the beginning?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. It's, like you said, it's historic. It's the first of its kind. We can look at things like the Japanese American reparations process to get a sense of, you know, what this might have looked like. But the task force, as it is now, is on track to finish its work on the deadlines that were set out for it. One big development that happened in San Diego is that the task force voted on whether or not it would ask the state legislature to extend its tenure an extra year. Now, that extension wouldn't change any of their deadlines. Their recommendations to the legislature would still be due at the end of this coming June. But an extra year would give task force members time to sort of shepherd those recommendations through the legislature. They've come up with dozens of policy recommendations, and they're going to need legislators and lawmakers generally to take these on, to refine them further, to write the laws, and then to lobby for them to be passed into law sort of from the bill stage. And that's a lot of work. And so they want to stay together for an extra year to make sure that happens. So they, you know, the task force can't decide on its own to extend its charter. This has to be something that's approved by the state legislature. And Senator Bradford, whose clip you recently played, has introduced a bill into the Senate to extend the task force work for an extra year. So I would say you know, is going as planned, but they want a little extra time to make sure they can give those reparations the send-off they want them to have in order to be successful.
Finally, I mean, you're in Sacramento because you're going to be going to those meetings Friday and Saturday. What's on the agenda? What do you hope to see and to take in?
Yeah, so a big topic of conversation at these meetings is going to be the implementation of these policy proposals. So kind of that, what I just mentioned, that like, how do we get this from this document that we're going to send to the legislature to actually being broken out into separate policy, into separate bills and then passed through the legislature. So they're going to hear from a panel of experts about that. And I think it's going to be a big focus of conversation. Another big thing is that public education plan that I was talking to you about. They're expected to announce a partnership with UC Berkeley School of Education to develop a curriculum using that interim report that details the state's involvement in kind of perpetuating white supremacy throughout the state into kind of bite-sized activities that students in our public schools and in our private schools can do to learn about this history and really integrate this knowledge into our understanding of who we are as a state.
Well, Annalise, thank you for following along and breaking it down for us.
Thank you, Vicky.
Annalise Finney is a reporter for KQED, covering California's Reparations Task Force, studying the systemic impact of slavery on African Americans and creating recommendations for reparations. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. We're going to continue this conversation with Dr. Jovan Scott Lewis, an associate professor and chair of the Department of Geography at UC Berkeley and member of the California Reparations Task Force. Professor Lewis, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Vicky. Thanks for having me.
What led to you becoming part of this 9-member task force?
Sure. So, you know, my research, you know, focuses on the histories of discrimination, in particular, the area of, you know, racialized impoverishment in African-American communities. And so a part of that is me thinking about reparations. How do we remedy those historical harms and those conditions? And so, to be frank, I was asked to interview for a spot on the task force, which I happily accepted. And I was very pleased to learn that I was, you know, accepted as a governor appointee to the task force.
It's one thing to have an idea, to pen legislation, to get it signed into law. That is a feat in and of itself, right? But in practice, has this task force been effective?
It really has. You know, one of the things that, you know, my research has focused on is how do we actually conceptualize what it means to provide reparations? You know, and because there has been such little action on this front in the United States, a lot of my work prior to joining the task force was speculative. What could be done? What should be done? And so, you know, one of the reasons why I joined was I wanted to actually, you know, do some of the work of materializing, you know, some of those ideas. And what I found is that we've been very effective at both providing an account of the historical and contemporary harms that African Americans in the state of California have faced and continue to face in many ways, and also thinking very deeply and seriously about the appropriate remedies to those harms. And so I would say really and truly, we've been very effective at attending to those harms and thinking about policies and remedies.
Annalise brought up an important point that there are challenges in the future that are outside the task force. What is your confidence that the research and the recommendations that come from you and your task force colleagues will really rise above bureaucratic gridlock, political hurdles, and actually be implemented?
So, you know, I am confident that what we will be putting forward in the next few months will be a thorough and considerate set of proposals. You know, the idea is that we want to first, you know, really provide adequate care and service, you know, to the communities that have been harmed. And we want to do so in a way that will actually, you know, go about the business of providing remedy to them. And so, you know, we are working on, you know, a very robust set of proposals across a dozen areas of harms. And we are thinking very carefully about what, you know, can be done, you know, at the state level. And so I think that, you know, besides politics and outside of, you know, what we can think of as the varied public opinion, the proposals that we're going to put forward really, you know, will be something that will be implementable. The question, of course, is, you know, will the state's leaders, elected leaders, be willing to implement it? And will the public, you know, really find it within, you know, their hearts? And I say that intentionally, find it within their hearts to recognize the historical harms that, you know, their fellow, you know, California residents in this injured community have experienced, and support the work of the elected officials.
Are you confident that your task force will come up with recommendations by this summer, or would you like it to be extended another year?
No, the recommendations will be presented on time. You know, we've done a tremendous amount of work as a task force and with the support of the DOJ, where we have dozens, you know, I think almost 80 members of the DOJ helping us, you know, draft these policies. So we're definitely on time. You know, we are considering what we voted to extend the life of the task force to keep us as a body for another year, so that we can support the state in implementing, you know, if we are needed to provide clarification or feedback on the process. We want to make sure that we're available to provide that. But as far as the actual recommendations, they will be ready on time as of the July 1 deadline.
Well, let's get to the last in-person meeting, which takes place tomorrow, or starts tomorrow and continues to Saturday in Sacramento, and which is also open to the public. You're going to be discussing five key questions, which relate to damage timeframes, residency requirements, lineage of slavery, and compensation. How did the task force come to a conclusion to define these five categories?
Sure. So before I answer, I want to clarify that tomorrow is not our last in-person meeting. Or this weekend, we have a virtual meeting in April. We have a virtual meeting in May, but we will be coming together again in person for our final meeting in June. So the location has not yet been determined, but we will be meeting once more in person in June. And so the five areas largely are, you know, derived from the mandate that we were provided, you know, through and from AB 3121, which is the bill that formed the reparations task force. You know, within AB 3121, it laid out very clearly what our scope of responsibility, you know, was. And so many of those areas really, you know, come from the bill that formed the task force.
A topic that we discussed was eminent domain, and something that developed recently was Bruce's Beach. It was an unprecedented first of its kind reparations to the Bruce family, which saw Los Angeles County rather return a beachfront land that was seized. Was this a step forward in the right direction? Do you think we're going to see more of this form of reparations?
I definitely think it was, you know, a long overdue remedy to the Bruce family. What we have to recognize is that there are, you know, many experiences and accounts similar to the Bruce's, you know, experience. And so it certainly is a step in the right direction, but we have to think about scale. You know, we're talking about eminent domain. You know, we're talking about the fact that, you know, a lot of property was taken from African Americans in this state. A lot of communities were demolished as a result of various development projects in the state. And they happened, you know, that development happened, you know, disproportionately, you know, as a consequence of dispossession for the African-American community. And so certainly Bruce's Beach is a step in the right direction. But, you know, that was a remedy for a particular family. What we need to focus on is exactly how the state had a part in a really wholesale kind of dispossession of African-American property, you know, throughout its history.
I mean, you're talking about at that time, you know, dreams and livelihoods were also destroyed. It wasn't just property. Mm-hmm. Given that the Bruce family, I mean, many no longer live in California, they were able to sell the land for $20 million, but, you know, also never realized the dreams of the original owners who helped create a small resort for Black residents. How do you view the sale of the land back to Los Angeles County? And does it change the way we should view what reparations should be?
So, you know, again, the return of the land to the Bruce family, right, really, really was a reparative act for the family, you know, but it doesn't represent, to my mind at least, what we as a task force are thinking of as reparations, you know, which is, again, thinking about how the entirety of the eligible community of African Americans have, you know, been impacted by successive waves of anti-Black discrimination in the state's history. And so it's appropriate, you know, for the Bruce family to do what they want to do with the property that was rightfully theirs. You know, there's no expectation of what they should do, you know, given that they as a family had their family's property returned to them, you know, and property that was wrongfully taken. Now, what we should think of, though, is reparations is about responding to the historical harms that the particular community in question, you know, have faced. Now, if we are to think about what, you know, was promised to these, you know, members of these communities, which is, you know, freedom, liberty, you know, the full endowment of the rights of citizenship, then reparations, you know, alongside the kind of policies of guarantees against repetition of harms, you know, beyond that, what reparations should do is actually fulfill that promise of liberty. And so what that means is there's also freedom of choice. To deny a freedom of choice to, you know, the eligible community for any compensation that's awarded, for example, would effectively be to undermine the principle of reparations, to my mind.
Finally, Professor Lewis, you know, a big component of this task force has been listening to the community. How has that experience been?
Well, it's been complicated. There's a lot of hurt in the African-American community in the state of California. And I think, you know, I'm not a native Californian. And what I do know effectively as an outsider is that California has a particular narrative. You know, there's the notion of a progressiveness, you know, of the kind of liberty of Western expansion that we know historically is associated with the state. But it's been hard to actually, you know, be properly confronted with the very deep discrimination against this community that really begins with the state's, you know, founding, and how it continuously has been reformulated, you know, through Jim Crow, through housing discrimination, through mass incarceration, through contemporary employment and educational discrimination, through the ongoing impact of gentrification. What we were confronted with, and what really was a challenge, was seeing and reckoning with the fact that this community has continued to face harms, you know, since the entire, you know, since their arrival in the state, and we have to kind of think about how to you know, to process that, you know, as a state, and I really do, you know, encourage, you know, California residents to read the interim report that the task force put out last year, or at least the executive summary, which is about 30 pages long, to get a sense as to exactly what, you know, their fellow, you know, Black Californians have faced and continue to face.
Professor Lewis, thank you for the time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Javon Scott Lewis is an associate professor and chair of the Department of Geography at UC Berkeley and a member of California's Reparations Task Force. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.